The Swain Event Podcast is driven by Beatty Chevrolet. For your new and pre-owned vehicle shopping needs, visit BeattyChevrolet.com.
Beatty Chevrolet saves you money. 2.9% APR or $5,000 total value on new Silverado 1500s. New Equinox with 1.9% APR plus no payments for 90 days or $2,500 total cash allowance at Beatty Chevrolet.
Deep down the middle's got his man and he's gone. Jason Swain, touchdown.
It's time for the Swain Event with your host, Jason Swain.
My man.
Real sports talk for the real sports fan.
All you chumps are going to bow when I whoop him.
It's time for the Swain Event, fueled by Dead End Barbecue.
Get into his house and a red flag.
SwainEvent.com, fueled by Dead End Barbecue, top 100 barbecue restaurant in America. March the 5th edition of the program. I'm your host, Jason Swain, live from the Lowe's T Center Studio. We'll be joined by Ben McGee, GoBall 247, here shortly. Oh, man, a lot to get to today. The Beatty Chevrolet text box is open for you on that free Swain Event app. Send in your questions, send in your comments. Love to answer them. Love to read them and address them. Hope everyone is having a fantastic morning. How about the basketball team? In position for a number one seed. Tennessee, according to Jerry Palm, CBS, Tennessee is a number one seed in his eyes. Joe Lunardi, ESPN. Hey, maybe we got some more work to do. That's okay. I'm totally cool with that. Right now, Joe Lunardi, Houston, Arizona, UConn, Purdue. I'm cool with that. Right now, Joe Lunardi, ESPN, has Tennessee as a two seed in the South region, which lines up perfectly. I mean, perfect, guys. Fairfield as a 15 seed. Nevada and Texas Tech. You get out of that bracket for a chance for the Sweet 16. And then the Pittsburgh bracket for a chance to go to the Elite Eight will include Dayton, South Florida, Creighton, Charleston. The other side that includes the number one overall seed, excuse me, not overall seed, but the number one seed in Houston has South Dakota State, Mississippi State, Nebraska, Illinois, Penn State, Duke, Samford. You mean tell me Tennessee can't beat every single team here to go to the Final Four or go to the Elite Eight where you play Houston for a chance to go to the Final Four if everything works out the way it's supposed to and the two best teams all season long play like the best in the tournament and they match up in the Elite Eight? Yo, I'll take that. I'll take Tennessee playing in Charlotte. I'll take it. Bring it on. That's a hop and a skip for us. That is a hop and a skip for us. But if you are the number one seed, the last number one seed, you're in the West Coast. You're on the West Coast. You're playing Salt Lake City. If Arizona is the number two seed, you're playing on the West Coast, Los Angeles, for a chance to go to the Final Four. Now, as a number two seed in the South, you will have to play against Houston versus Houston in Dallas for a chance to go to the Final Four. But the win Saturday meant that Tennessee can win big games on the road. That's what it means for me. Tennessee had a huge game against Auburn. Auburn is a team that can make a deep run in the tournament. That game was at home. You're not going to play at home when you're making deep runs into the tournament. So you have to be able to win away from your home court. And Tennessee being up versus Alabama and then falling behind versus Alabama and probably, arguably, the most hostile environment in college basketball. Probably the best home court advantage in college basketball, arguably. Duke is not Duke of old. You look at Auburn, and that's a really, really tough place to play as well. But falling behind after having the lead and then making plays, and it didn't take Dalton Knecht saving us this time. He was a very important piece in the second half, made some plays, had some foul trouble, but the play of Jemima Mashak, the play of Josiah Jordan James going into this game, I wouldn't have thought that Josiah Jordan James would be the player getting us a double-double. That's more reserved for a guy like Jonas Adu. We saw Toby Walker get a double-double versus Missouri. We've seen Dalton Knecht recently hit a double-double. But Josiah Jordan James, timely shots, rebounds. Josiah was a man against Alabama. That was a great win, guys. Oh, man. So happy for Jemima Mashak. Hit a couple threes. Hit him like he always hits three or four in the game. He didn't even flinch, didn't celebrate, didn't take a deep breath, hit him, got back on defense. And because of that, got the steal. Zakai Ziegler hit Jonas Adu for the and-one. Dalton Knecht is your SEC Player of the Year. I don't think there's a doubt about that. This matchup Saturday wasn't about Dalton Knecht versus Mark Sears. I was looking forward to the matchup between Sears and Zakai Ziegler, who are two totally different point guards for their team. But who's the best point guard? You have the best point guard argument. You have the best player argument. They are different. They are totally different. Hoopers understand what I'm talking about here. I can take Allen Iverson. I can take Jason Kidd. But who's the better player? Allen Iverson won MVP. Allen Iverson dominated the league when he played. Allen Iverson wasn't your prototypical point guard, though. He was a scorer. Jason Kidd, a facilitator. Chris Paul, facilitator. John Stockton, facilitator. Offense runs smooth. Zakai Ziegler, my opinion, better point guard. You want some numbers? I got something for you. And we can just talk offense. It's cool. We can talk offense. We don't have to even talk defense. Because defense, we already know who has the edge there? That's Nekai Ziegler. But just offense. Mark Sears, who is a better scorer, who, if you want to make the argument he's a better player, totally cool with that. Because Mark Sears is a bucket. To be 6 foot tall, doing what he is doing, he's unreal. He's a great, great player. Better offensive player than Nekai Ziegler. I'm not going to argue that. I'm not going to push back on that at all. I think Mark Sears is a better offensive player than Nekai Ziegler. But in two head-to-head matchups, Tennessee and Alabama, Nekai Ziegler, Mark Sears. You can't argue with the numbers. Like, you just can't argue with the numbers here. Oh, man, I've been waiting on this. I've been waiting on this to see Ben McKee with no background, nothing at all on the walls, just Ben, and that's it. I've been waiting on that, man. We got Ben McKee up in here. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Sueno. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Just in the middle of a point here about Nekai Ziegler and about Mark Sears. I think Mark Sears is a better offensive player. I think Nekai Ziegler is a better point guard for his team. And Mark Sears does a great job being who he needs to be for his team. And Nekai Ziegler is who he is for his team. But in the two games that they matched up against each other, it's hard to argue what Nekai Ziegler did, and it's hard to argue what Mark Sears did in those games. Very hard to argue. And I look at the two matchups. I look at Mark Sears, who had 8 assists combined in the two games, and 11 turnovers in those two games. 11. The math ain't mathing, Ben McKee. It ain't mathing here. I look at Nekai Ziegler and what he did two games. And Ben McKee, Nekai Ziegler, 10 assists. 10. A Billy Bob blanking 10. 10 assists. One turnover. One turnover, Ben. So we can't ignore that. Like, you can't ignore that if you are looking at Mark Sears and Nekai Ziegler. Like, you can look at the points that Sears puts up, and you can't argue with that, man. Like, you really can't. Can't argue with it. There's no arguing with that. But, Ben, point guard play, the advantage goes to Nekai Ziegler.
1,000%, and I don't even think that it's close. Mark Sears is a scorer. He is a scoring guard. Now that's what Mark Sears is to me, and he's really good. He is
great.
Probably number two in my SEC Player of the Year voting, if I had a vote, which I don't. Number two behind Dalton Connect, obviously, and congratulations to Bruce. He can now properly vote in the SEC Player of the Year race since Tennessee. Well, I guess it's not confirmed yet. I was thinking in my head since Tennessee beat Alabama.
That's it.
I guess technically Tennessee. No, he said whoever wins the league, and technically Tennessee has not won the league just yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Alabama could still technically win it, but that's such a ridiculous comment. But that's a separate conversation. But yeah, I mean, I've been saying for weeks now, Swain, that there isn't a point guard in the country that I'm taking over Nekai Ziegler. You know, the Marquette point guard, He may be technically better than Zakai Ziegler in terms of just a basketball player offensively or whatever, Kolak. But when you consider what Zakai does defensively, what he does in terms of getting the offense going, the leadership, the toughness, his ability to score the basketball as well. It's not like he's not capable of knocking down shots. He had a bad shooting night in Tuscaloosa and still managed to knock down some very, very big shots at the end of the game to help Tennessee win. So just when you take everything that Zakai does on the court and then what he brings to the team in terms of being the heart and soul and the leader and all of that stuff, the intangibles, there isn't a point guard in the country I'd rather have going into March than Zakai Ziegler. I mean, it's as simple as that. And Zakai deserves a lot of credit. There's others that deserve credit for slowing down Mark Sears as well, because Jemai Meshack has made life HE double hockey sticks on Mark Sears twice this season. And, you know, Santi has gotten switched on to him as well and others. But the job that Zakai and especially Jemai have done on Mark Sears this season has been incredible. And I do think that Alabama team is a bit overrated. I think they're really good. I don't think they're Final Four national championship quality. I kind of think it's Mark Sears or bust, quite frankly. And this Tennessee defense, with the way it defends on the perimeter, you can't be one player or bust, because they will lock down that one player, and you saw that in both Alabama matchups this season.
Ooh, overrated. All right. Alabama and Kentucky remind me so much of each other, man. So much of each other. I mean, you can go look at KenPom, and I think KenPom will support my statement here. When you look at Alabama's offensive efficiency, they're number one in the country. Defense, they are 100th in the country. You go and you look at Kentucky, and Kentucky's offense is 8th in the country, offensive efficiency. Defense, 97. So you get offense, Ben. I mean, you get 100-point explosion. You can see that. We've saw Alabama do it a couple times this year. We've seen Kentucky do it a couple times this year. But for both teams, defense is their Achilles heel, and Tennessee exposed them on Saturday, man.
That's why neither team is going to make a run in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. I would be stunned if Alabama or Kentucky make a run in the tournament, especially Kentucky. I'm so tired of this Kentucky narrative that every time they win a basketball game, folks want to hand them a national championship or hang a Final Four banner. And I get it. They have a ton of talent, but in terms of being a good basketball team, whether you are consistent or not also decides whether you are a good basketball team. So you can talk about all the potential and the upside and this and that. The potential and the upside relates to what these players are going to be at the professional level. In terms of team basketball at the collegiate level, they are incapable of stringing wins together because they are so poor on the defensive end. And as a result, I would be very, very surprised if they end up making a run here over the next couple of weeks once they get into the tournament. But the national media and some others would have you believing that they're going to win the national championship after they win each and every single game, never mind the fact that they have to score 100 and prevent Arkansas from scoring for 8 minutes in order to win on their home court. And look, the Alabama, the Auburn win, those are very impressive wins, no doubt about it. They beat Mississippi State on Mississippi State's home court, something that Tennessee was not able to do. But let's hold off on handing in the trophy, okay, before we get into the tournament.
I'm with you, man. When you going to put something on your wall, man? Like a Joey Kent
at some point.
Poster?
I've got
their play poster or something.
I've got three of them. Contrary to popular belief, I also have a diploma from Tennessee. Which a lot of people who like to rib me about Auburn and Kentucky and Texas A&M and Alabama, I mean, those people, I'd like to see where their diploma for the University of Tennessee is at.
They're working on it, man. They're working on it.
I've got me a nice frame for that. I might put that up behind me. I think I'm going to retire the John Morant decor but behind me for the time being. But I do have me some nice Joey Kent framed plays, his business that he is running. I've got that legendary play.
Google, yes, that legendary play. Go to the website, get your prints.
Yes, I've got the Chris Lofton one when he shot the shot over KD. I've got the Drew Gilbert one, the walk-off grand slam. And then I've got the Peyton to Joey Kent first play at Alabama. So there's a good chance that those end up behind me.
There you go.
Or the diploma. So I can flex on people when they want to call me Big Blue Ben or All Ben. I'll just point to my diploma up there and y'all can shut your mouth.
It's Big Blue Ben would be BBBN.
No, it'd just be BBB.
Oh, man.
Triple B.
Big Blue Ben Nation. BBBN. Oh, man. 865-255-03 is our telephone number. Text box, BetyChevrolet.com is the website. Text box is open for you. We'll get to this one event, Beatty Chevrolet text box, when we return. It's Ben McKee, GoVols247. I'm Jason Swain. Stay with us.
Beatty Chevrolet saves you money. 2.9% APR or $5,000 total value on new Silverado 1500s. New Equinox with 1.9% APR plus no payments for 90 days or $2,500 total cash allowance at Beatty Chevrolet.
When you are craving some quality barbecue, there's only one place to go, Dead End Barbecue. Dead End Barbecue has been featured on ESPN's Taste of the Town, the first barbecue restaurant on the SEC Network, CBS Sports, Headline News Tailgate Show, Amazon Prime's The Restaurant Comeback, Food Paradise, and named one of the top 100 barbecue restaurants in America. The search is over. Dead End Barbecue is located on 3621 Sutherland Avenue right here in Knoxville. You can even have it delivered right to your door through Chow Now. Visit their website at deadendbbq.com. Dead End Barbecue. The search is over.
Hey, Vol Nation. This is Charlie Pratt, financial representative with Modern Woodmen and MWA Financial Services. Modern Woodmen has been touching lives and securing futures for 140 years. Being born and raised here in East Tennessee, I'm honored to help East Tennesseans in all phases of life with retirement planning, investments, and life insurance. A big win on Saturday starts with preparation early in the week. A secure financial future starts with planning today. Contact my office today at 865-919-6468 to review your financial plan and make sure you are on track for success. As always, go Vols.
Registered representative and investment advisor, representative offering securities and advisory services through NWA Financial Services, Inc., a wholly owned subsidiary of Modern Woodmen of America, member of FINRA, SIPC.
What's up, Swain Event crew? Always happy to be with my friends in the morning. So, everybody has a next chapter in life, right? And sometimes that includes a move. Your next page may have a growing family, or maybe an empty nest, or possibly a move back home. When the time comes, I'll be here to help. Just give me a call. Jennifer Morris, Keller Williams Realty, 865-694-5904. And check out my website, nextmovesmokymountains.com. As always, go Vols!
Just because you can't call in doesn't mean that you have to sit on the sideline. Impact the show with a text box. It's part of the free Swain Event app.
Swain Event, SwainEvent.com, fueled by Dead End Barbecue. Oh, man. It's time for a little bit of revenge. Because he was able to get some earlier in the month, but that was technically last month when Tennessee played Texas A&M. Correct. Tennessee was able to get that revenge, though, versus Texas A&M. Now it's about being able to get it against South Carolina. And we know Carolina plays well at home. They already beat Kentucky And that was before I think Kentucky really got exposed. I think people looked at Kentucky as, oh, it's Kentucky, it's the logo, they got a lot of talent. But that was, I think that was the first moment like Kentucky was really exposed. And then South Carolina got their big win, the win that really started to get them respect and recognition, because they did beat Kentucky at home, but it was the win on the road versus Tennessee that everyone knew was a top 10 team. That's when people started saying, oh, okay, okay. Yeah, this South Carolina team, they for real. And Tennessee played so bad, so early, and just couldn't get it going. Now you're playing a South Carolina team that I don't think is playing at the same level as they did before. And I think Tennessee is playing at a higher level than they did before when these two teams met earlier, Ben.
No, I completely agree. And if you go back and watch that game or look at the box score, Zakai Ziegler played his worst game of the season. He had 2 points, which at that point in time was a season low. And I don't believe he has scored two or less since that South Carolina game. So if I'm correct, that is the season low in points for Zakai this season. He had a really, really bad shooting night, 0 of 4 or 0 of 5 from 3. I don't have the stats in front of me. But it was just a really poor night for Zakai. I think it was 3 assists and a couple of turnovers. We just got done hyping up Zakai, and rightfully so, and talking about how great he's been. It wasn't vintage Zakai in that game. And then Jonas Adu played 20 minutes because of foul trouble. Didn't really have his typical impact, only grabbed 5 rebounds. Tennessee got bullied in the paint. Dalton Connect, he ended up scoring, I think it was 31, but 15 of those 31 came within the last 8 minutes and 18 seconds. And it wasn't the most efficient night for DK. The final stats ended up looking good because he went on that outrageous stretch there to end the game and gave Tennessee a chance to win. Tennessee only loses by 4 because of DK popping off there at the end after it looked real bleak and looked like Carolina was going to truly run Tennessee out of its own gym. And then Dalton flipped the switch and was able to give them a chance in the last minute or so. So I think when you look back at that Auburn game last Wednesday night, it shows like, yes, Dalton was Dalton. And in my opinion, that performance should have generated a conversation at minimum about Dalton being the national player of the year. I understand that Zach Edey is absolutely going to win that award because a lot of people, if not everybody, has already made up their mind.
You probably should win it now.
No, I was about to say, I'm not saying that he shouldn't. I'm just saying that I think that maybe we should have more of an open conversation about it.
Yeah,
just a quick conversation is all I'm saying.
It's quick.
It's a real quick
conversation.
At the end of the day, Dalton's going to be a consensus All-American.
Yep.
And like Zach Edey, it's weird. I truly do believe this now, Swain. Zach Edey, National Player of the Year. Dalton Connect, best player in college basketball this season.
Yeah.
I would rather have Dalton Connect than Zach Edey, and I don't think that that's a crazy hot take.
No. I mean,
he is a better overall basketball player than Zach Edey.
Yeah. I mean, Dalton Connect will be drafted before Zach Edey if both guys go into the draft.
I haven't seen the latest mock drafts, but, I mean, my initial thought would be that Zach Edey would be lucky to go in the first round.
I mean,
that's at least what the case was coming back for another season. I don't know how much him coming back has changed in the mock drafts. But regardless, my point about the Auburn game is like, yes, Dalton was All-American, Dalton Connect. But this Tennessee team is really, really hard to beat when Dalton, Zakai, and Jonas are all clicking.
Yep.
And those three were not all clicking for 40 minutes against South Carolina. Jonas was not what Jonas is and has turned into. Zakai played his worst game of the season, and it took until 8 minutes left in the game for Dalton to get going. And South Carolina had a lot to do with that. I also think that Tennessee had a lot to do with that. Tennessee was not as locked in as they are right now. I spoke to somebody in the program after that loss that said there is too much in the huddles of that basketball game too many people saying, oh, we're good. We're going to be okay. It's going to turn out okay. There's too much of comforting one another. And if you remember, that's kind of when Rick Barnes came out that week and said, no, we've got to be more accountable. And called out Zakai.
That was straight to ZZ.
Yeah, it was. But there were others as well. Yeah. And like there's been a different – like I saw Santi – I've seen a different Santi in practice the last couple of weeks. Like he is the way a leader should – been getting on to guys and pretty aggressively the way and again, not in a bad way, in a good way. It's what this team needed. And Zakai's been doing the same thing. I've seen Santi get after DK in practice pretty aggressively for not, quite frankly, boxing out. And he said, we just went over this in a much more aggressive tone. We need you to box out. And DK ended the practice rebounding very well. And then DK, I think that was the game that DK went out and almost had a double-double because of rebounds, or did have a double-double because of rebounds. But there's too much, we're going to be okay in that first loss, and there's a different mindset this time around. So I would think that with a different mindset, and I'm not expecting Zakai and Jonas and Dalton to, those three to combine to play as poorly as they did in that first matchup around. So I would expect for them to bounce back. But unfortunately, unlike the Texas A&M rematch, this is not in your home building. South Carolina's playing for an SEC championship. Mm-hmm. That building is going to be sold out with 16,000 people, and it's going to be raucous, and it's going to be a hostile environment.
Tennessee shot 60% from the free throw line, too, in the first meeting, Ben, which is absolutely unacceptable. Z and Don Connect should be better free throw shooters on the year. I think they understand that. They know that. Z knocked down some clutch free throws at the end of Alabama, but like from a percentage standpoint, it should be higher. But as a team, 60% will get you beat in the tournament, and 60% got Tennessee beat against South Carolina because you lost by four. There, you mentioned Don Connect with 31 points. Zakai Ziegler had 2 points in that game. He didn't make a three. He didn't make a shot. He had 2 points. Jonas Adu, 6 points. So between the three, you had 39 points, and Duncan had 31. So you only lost by four, shooting 60% from the free throw line, 24% from three. Oh, yeah. You know what time it is. Like, you know what time it is. It's
hard to beat this Tennessee team twice, too.
Yeah, it's going
to
be good. It's going
to
be good.
The problem, though, is that it's on the road. You don't get the benefit of the rematch being in your own building. But I think last week showed that Tennessee is more than capable of handling that environment.
Yeah, you handled Alabama's environment. You should be able to handle the environment this weekend. Excuse me, Wednesday. The difference is it's a midweek game. Will the same crowd, will it be the same crowd if the game was on Saturday? That
I would be surprised if it's not, just because it's I'm assuming it's the last home game for South Carolina. I don't know who or where they play on Saturday. But I would assume so, Swain.
It's hard for me to believe it'd be the same.
What's that?
I said it's hard for me to believe that for South Carolina it would be the same. It would be the same crowd. Like yeah, they play Mississippi State away. So, yeah, this is their last home game.
I guess the difference is they won't be as liquored up, I assume, because it's a work day. People are probably going to be trying to get off work early to make sure that they get over in time for the 7 p.m. tip. And you just don't have all day Saturday to drink. Alabama fans had all day Saturday to drink. Just ask Jemai Meshack when that poor little boy tried to step on him as he was shooting that three and yelling at him as he was pulling the trigger. That was a pretty funny video, and some of the photos of that moment are pretty cool as well if you're Jemai Meshack. But I guess, yeah, you're right. I don't think it'll be a big difference, though. I mean, they won't be as liquored up, I guess you could say, but that place is going to be rocking. The SEC championship on the line. What Lamont Paris has done this season has been phenomenal.
Yep.
It's going to be a tough environment. I think it'll be as tough as it was on Saturday in Tuscaloosa.
last time Tennessee took a top five team into South Carolina, there was an upset. That was 2 years ago. Yeah. Football program. Tennessee was ranked fifth. Tennessee basketball going into South Carolina ranked fourth right now. So I was about to say about Zach Edey before we go back to the, before we go to the text box. Zach Edey had 32 points. 11 rebounds versus Michigan State. So, I mean, that,
he's a beast.
That probably sealed the deal. I mean, the deal is probably sealed for a while. But like for me, I'm no longer on. I can no longer beat the Dalt Connect National Player of the Year drum after what Zach Edey did to Michigan State this past weekend and what Dalt Connect did versus Alabama. Like it's
hypothetical.
It's a wrap.
Hypothetical.
Hmm?
What if DK drops 40? In both games this week to win Tennessee and SEC championship.
It's over, man.
It's over. I'm not at all gonna argue against Zach Edey winning National Player of the Year. He is very, very deserving. I hate how we as college basketball fans, as a collective, everybody involved for the most part, just handed him the award in January, early February. That would be my only gripe. And when I say that, I'm not saying that he still shouldn't win the award. I just think Dalton has had a National Player of the Year worthy season, especially coming out of that Auburn game. And he has great opportunities to add to his case. That doesn't mean that his case will end up being better, but he has opportunities this week to add to his case and potentially make it a little more of an intriguing conversation.
Yeah, I feel you. But yeah, it's a wrap. It's a wrap. And that's
at the end of the day, he's going to be a consensus All-American, which to me, that's just as good as winning the National Player of the Year.
It's really good.
Very similar.
It's a step below.
Yes.
There's one spot for National Player of the Year. There's five spots for All-American. So
touche.
It's still great. Don't get me wrong. Clay says, I also think it's South Carolina spring break. A lot of tickets are available at South Carolina as low as $20. Maybe a light crowd. I don't really think it matters, honestly, for Tennessee because they played in a hostile environment against Alabama. Vossel Hart, 615, says, how do we replace the scoring we lose next season? Does Jamai grow offensively or do we go back to the portal and add another legit score? I love the talent. We return, but the lack of premier shooting, ZZ, Ganey, Mayshak, Tobe, Adu could offer a problem. Could be a problem. Come on, Vol So Hard, man. Can we enjoy where we are right now? Come on, man. But to answer your question, yeah, they'll go to the portal, and I think they will have opportunity to attract the next Dalton Connect.
I believe that they want to add two starters from the portal because and the offense is going to take a step back. You're going to lose a consensus All-American who we just got done talking about and a guy who is, I mean, if he pops off in March, Swain, in the NCAA tournament with all the eyeballs on him, he could be a top five pick. I mean, he's already lottery pick. I've seen top 10 projections. I personally have not seen any top five projections just yet. But if he goes into March and he goes like on a 4 or 5 game heater to lead Tennessee to Final Four or an Elite Eight, I could see him skyrocket to a top five pick. But you're losing that. So obviously, and his game is offense, right? He's known because he's such a great scorer. So you're naturally going to take a step back. But I don't think the offense with what we know is coming back currently, I don't think it'll be bad at all next year. I think it'll still be a good offense. So the question is it a top 15 offense? Is it top 25? Is it top 30? Where do they rank statistically? Because you have Zakai coming back. Who do you want at point guard in the country coming back over Zakai Ziegler? You're going to have Jordan Ganey, and he is very capable of being a double-digit scorer per game, averaging double digits. I mean, you saw that in the first half against Alabama on Saturday night. Cameron Carr is an absolute bucket. Once he can find some confidence, if he can add some weight this offseason, some strength, I mean, he was giving Tennessee's veterans buckets this past summer when he stepped foot on campus. So he's a guy with a big offseason, like a Freddie DeLeon, big offseason. Those are two offensive weapons that are absolutely capable of contributing. I think Jemai Meshack is capable of doing more on the offensive end. You have Jonas coming back. You have Tobe coming back. He'll be a junior. JP Estrella is capable of giving you some offensive punch as well. He'll be a sophomore. So you've got quite a bit coming back, and I'm sure I'm leaving somebody off as well. But they want to go add two starters from the portal. They want to add somebody on the wing, and then they want to add kind of a Josiah Jordan James type that is also a wing player who can also play the four as well and give them lineup flexibility to go small. And that's going to be a tough task replacing Josiah because of his flexibility and versatility that allows them to do that. But I do think that they want to add two starters from the portal. And like you said, Swain, we've seen it with Tennessee baseball. Tennessee baseball had success with those first round of transfers under Tony Vitello. Now everybody wants to come play for Tony. I think you're seeing it in football, and I think you're really going to see it with basketball now as well. And my final thought, and I apologize for being long-winded, but something that I like, I get the sense that they're putting all of that on the back burner. And they should, because they have a chance to go out and win a national championship and a Final Four. They're not neglecting recruiting and the transfer portal. They're still paying attention to it and doing their due diligence. But I think right all now. Of their what's that?
I mean, there's nothing you can do with the portal. I mean, unless you know, we just got in trouble for that, so we can't do that. We can't unless you tamper. There's nothing else you can really do. And so we've had two little tampering slaps on the wrist in two different sports in the last couple of months. So, you know, we already just slapped the NCAA across the face. So we just got to move careful right now.
And I was more so like, I mean, the portal's going to open up in a week and a half once these conference tournaments start and begin, and teams who don't make the NCAA tournament as their seasons are coming to an end.
And you recruit then. Once it opens up, you recruit. That don't mean you lose like that you're not focused on this season, but like the players don't have to know you talking to recruits. Like in football, we used to have coaches leave on a Friday night after meetings and then go recruit players for the future. So like you can recruit guys from the portal and be in a moment with this team this year and try to compete for a championship.
Well, I'm telling you, I think they're going to be really focused on the NCAA tournament. Like there was a kid that they were thinking about bringing in this weekend, and they're like, nah, let's try and win this SEC championship. They just don't want to host while they're trying to win a championship. And I like that, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe it comes back to bite them in the bud next year, but who cares about next year if you can make a Final Four this year? Quite frankly,
if that player is going to come this week, he can come another week. And if you don't understand
also,
that, he ain't for you.
And when I say that, I mean, this player is not a five-star, beating down the door, absolutely have to have him. I think we have him as a top 70 player. He's a top 100 player, so he's good, really good. But he's a late bloomer, rising up the rankings. But he's not somebody you absolutely have to have, and you do whatever you take to beat him.
He'd be out. 865-255-03. Swain Event, fueled by Dana Barbecue. Darrell Sims, new running back coach. And William Inge talked to me yesterday. Ben McKee was there. Give our takes on the new position coach addressing the media. When we come back, Swain Event, fueled by Dead End Barbecue.
Here in Knoxville, we love it when a squirrel's in the checkerboards. But when there's a squirrel in our attic, that's all sides. When that happens, call Alpha Wildlife. They're Knoxville's veteran-owned and operated wildlife removal company. When unwanted critters put their feet up on your coffee table, call 865-224-6555. Let the Tennessee fans at Alpha Wildlife evict those unwanted tenants and set your home up with a winning defense to keep that wildlife where it belongs. That's Alpha Wildlife at 865-224-6555. They have locations in Nashville, Memphis, Chattanooga, and in parts of South Carolina. Check them out online at alphawildlife.com.
Fellas, it's a new year. Low T Center can make it a great one.
If you've been feeling tired and grumpy, have noticed a lack of motivation and drive, you may have low T. Low testosterone levels can cause weight gain, loss of muscle mass, and so much more. I recommend Low T Center. It's where I get my levels tested. They make it quick and easy to get your levels checked, and it's only $25. And with their on-site lab, you'll get your results back in about 25 minutes. Go to lowtcenter.com now to book your appointment online. Low T Center, reinventing men's healthcare.
What's up, Swain Event crew? Always happy to be with my friends in the morning. So, everybody has a next chapter in life, right? And sometimes that includes a move. Your next page may have a growing family, or maybe an empty nest, or possibly a move back home. When the time comes, I'll be here to help. Just give me a call. Jennifer Morris, Keller Williams Realty, 865-694-5904. And check out my website, nextmovesmokymountains.com. As always, go Vols!
Looking for a different way to enjoy the show?
Yes!
Then check out Swain Event TV on YouTube.
Hey there, Swain Event fam. If you're currently renting and just about priced out of your place, give me a call. Jennifer Morris with Keller Williams Realty at 865-257-7897. You may be able to buy a home and have monthly payments less than your rent. And wouldn't you rather pay your own mortgage than someone else's? Hope to hear from you soon, and go Vols!
Ben McKee, Go Vols 247. Dude, I need you to put something on your wall, man. Before Thursday. Dude, I mean, do something. All right, say it again.
I just moved. I haven't even had internet for 24 hours.
I don't care, man. You got today, you got tomorrow. Draw a picture and hang it on the wall. Let Knox scribble something on a piece of paper and then put it on the wall. Do something. There you go. Those traps about to get real sore in a little bit.
What's that?
I said those traps will get real sore in a little bit. Just hold it like that. There you go.
I've got that dad strength now, toting around these fat little boys that keep eating up all my snacks in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Is this good enough for you?
I feel you. Yeah, that's good.
I can go get my diploma if you want it.
Nah, man, don't get that Photoshop stuff. We good. 865-255-03. So, Darrell Sims, new running back coach, came over from Louisville. William Inge, new linebackers coach, came over from Washington. You were there, Ben. I pulled some audio of what stood out to me from William Inge comments. I'll play that here shortly, but I want to kind of get what stood out to you from those two coaches, their comments yesterday.
Yeah, I tweeted this after they both got done speaking, but I could instantly tell with both of them why Josh Heupel wanted to add them to their staff. They had very likable personalities, infectious personalities, and was really drawn to both of them, quite frankly, especially William Inge. He was the one that really, really impressed me just because I feel like we all knew what Tennessee was getting in Darrell Sims, somebody that's going to be a really nice recruiter for Tennessee. With William Inge, there were questions about how he will be able to recruit at this level, and obviously those questions still exist, but if my son was playing football and being recruited and William Inge was sitting in my living room, it'd be hard for me as a parent not to appreciate kind of the plan that he is laying out, and both to develop as a football player and develop as a person. He just seemed like a great, I guess I could say, father figure for anybody that plays for him. A little quirky, and I say that in a good way. The kind of the comments that were going around the Go Vols 24/7 staff is he reminds you of those quirky college professors who just really love their job and love interacting with students and are trying to be hip to the new age stuff. He was really funny in a good way, and I say quirky in a good way. So I was I really was impressed by both of them. I think they're both going to add a ton to the staff. I think that they're going to be good culture fits for Josh Heupel. I think Darrell Sims is obviously going to be able to recruit. I thought it was cool how he discussed already having a prior relationship with Dylan Sampson from when he recruited Dylan to Louisville, and that prior relationship has helped his transition to Tennessee, because Dylan's been able to be a coach of sorts in the film room, or in the running backs room, I should say, and he's hoping that that translates to spring practice. And William Inge, he talked about how the fact that all of the youthfulness outside of Keenan Peely in the linebackers room, how that made him really excited to be at Tennessee and be able to develop them and not be with them for just 6 months or so, as he put it, and then you're switching out guys in the room. And he did talk about Keenan Peely and how he's going to lean on his leadership, and the fact that he's 26 years old, and guys are talking about what they did over the weekend, and Keenan's talking about how he was doing home projects with his wife over the weekend because he's in a much different phase of life than the Elijah Herrings or Arian Carters of the world. So I was really drawn to both. I think both are going to be really, really good hires, proved to be really good hires for Tennessee, and I think they're going to fit in just fine. They seem like good culture fits as well, which is just as important as what they do in terms of development on the field and recruiting on the recruiting trail.
No, I'm with you, man. I heard the coach's comments, and one thing that stood out to me is when Coach Inge was asked about what is he bringing from Washington. This is a team last year that played in the national championship game. They've been successful. And football is football at the end of the day. Like, I know sometimes as SEC fans, we only think, like, there's only one brand of football that should be played. There's only the only good football teams in the country playing the SEC. There's some other really good teams out there. Clemson has won a championship. Now, we've seen Michigan just win a championship. We've seen Ohio State win a championship. We've seen other teams compete for a championship. So, like, they're really good teams out here. And football is football at the end of the day. It's about establishing the line of scrimmage and making explosive plays on the outside, not beating yourselves. Football is football. The best competition with the better players is the SEC. But Inge was part of a championship quality program, built a championship quality program. And he was asked about what he is bringing to Tennessee from Washington. So here's what he had to say.
Probably the biggest thing is that when you pour into your young men, that is a byproduct of what occurs. And when you have a team that is player led, that is a byproduct of that. And when guys believe in one another and they do not beat themselves, that is a byproduct of that. And kind of one of our main maxims that we have in this program, when you look around the building, you know, the team that makes the least amount of mistakes will be the team that's going to be in the best position to be able to win the football game. Like, that is so true, that is said by Coach Nealon years ago, to where that is a staple in all of college football, or probably all of sport around the world. And if you could make sure that you could remain that particular team, you will be in every game.
Yeah, that's what stood out to me. Now, we'll work on Coach Inge and the verbiage, team that makes the fewest mistakes to win. Like, when you say it 50, 60, 70, 80 times, I mean, you just never forget it.
He said Nealon properly.
He did say that right. We've heard people say it wrong who are Tennessee fans. Remember, we had somebody call in and call it Nealon. I was like, who is that?
Oh, that was our guy, Jay.
Who is Nealon? Talking to a recruit? I know we ain't talking about the former coach here that the stadium is named for or named after, but when I heard in his comments and he really emphasized, you know, that connection, like, that's what did it for me, man. That's what did it for me. And
probably the biggest thing is,
here it is,
when you pour into your young men, that is a byproduct of what occurs. And when you have a team that is player led,
whoa, So, player led. Buying in, pouring into your players. It don't matter how quirky you are. People want to say that about him. Cool, whatever. We all got a little something about personality that stands out. That's a little bit different. And I like quirky. But if you have the ability to connect with people and you can pour in to a player's goals and dreams of being the best linebacker they can be, and you can help them achieve that, man, they're going to run through a brick wall for you. Inge mentioned player-led. Player-led. That's what this team needs to get to.
Yeah, that's what this team was lacking last season.
Yeah, man. That's what this team needs to get to. Yep.
And why you saw some of those second half collapses that you did, quite frankly. And I truly don't mean to constantly compare football to basketball or baseball, but I mean, I think that's what Tony Vitello and Rick Barnes have perfected is that they have had player led teams. And that's why you have seen them have a tremendous amount of success. And look, I think Josh Heupel has also done it in his short tenure at Tennessee. That Hendon Hooker team was led by Hendon Hooker. That was a player led team. I think you would have liked to have more guys than just Hendon leading the way. And you did. I think Jalen Hyatt did a good job of leading that season and leaving his mark on Jalen Wright. Jalen Wright this past season credited a lot of, you know, getting in the right frame of mind in terms of how to approach essentially a job by the way he watched Jalen Hyatt go about his business. So I think that Hendon Hooker-led team, maybe not as much as you would have wanted, but there are a couple of guys who absolutely did do a good job. Byron Young did a good job of leading that team, but it was lacking this past season. And I know we're talking linebackers, which Keenan Peely, I think, is a guy that can help you regain that. I think Dylan Sampson is absolutely a guy that is going to be one of the faces of the program and the team this season. But that's the next step for Tennessee, especially if it even just simply wants to get back to 10 wins like it did under Hendon, much less playing for an SEC championship, trying to make the playoffs, playing for a national championship. And I think Darrell Sims and William Inge, I think they're good culture fits, and I think you'll see a trickle-down effect because, yes, you need player-led team, Swain, but I think – you would agree, and I'm saying that because you obviously played at this level. I did not. You've been in those locker rooms. I do think a player-led team, a lot of it comes naturally. Zakai Ziegler, natural leader. Dylan Sampson, natural leader. Hendon Hooker, natural leader. But I also do think, on the other hand, it is a trickle-down effect from the coaches that are encouraging them to do that. And making sure that they come out of their shells and allow their natural leadership to shine.
That'll be the thing that this team will need to make sure that they have more of for sure. Let's get to the phones, 865-255-03. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's DZ in Milwaukee. What's happening?
What's
today?
Up, DZ?
Man, chilling. Excited to get down there in a couple of days. Hopefully the team takes care of business tomorrow, and then we could just make Saturday a big party.
No, that's right.
Yeah, I know a lot of Tennessee fans and the basketball program itself sure would enjoy cutting down the nets with Kentucky in the building.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm playing catch up a little bit, so when I called in, I heard you guys talking a little football. I'm not sure if you guys have gotten into the combine at all.
Nope.
I watched a little bit of the results. I think Jalen ran on Saturday, and I think Joe did all his stuff on Saturday as well. Looks like Joe did pretty good. I saw some of the write-ups about Joe. I think the best one I saw was from Joel Klatt, who I'm not really a fan of, but he actually wrote some good things about Joe, and we all know Joe has the arm talent. It's just about, instead of being a thrower, being an actual passer. And I know that was one thing that Joel Klatt, actually gave him praise for. So just hoping he can keep that up. I know, of course, he'll have a pro day sometime, and hopefully he can keep showing the same things. But Jalen Wright, I think that boy made himself a lot more money with some of the things he was able to showcase. And funny enough, after he ran that 4.38, you can see he was actually kind of pissed about it. So I'm expecting him to – oh, yeah, definitely. I'm expecting him to run a 4.2 at that pro day, to be honest.
Oh, man. I mean, I understand being faster than 4.38, but you going all the way to 4.2. I was thinking more like, you know, 4.33, 4.32, in that range.
Oh, well, I'll take it, but just to look at his face – you better believe he's going for it. And
yeah.
I think we all knew that he was a pretty good track guy coming out of high school. So, that was very encouraging for both of those guys. I didn't get to see much of Kamal at all, but definitely I thought the other two did well for themselves.
Yeah, Joel Clack said, can he play the position? You have to go to the tape. I don't care what his miles per hour were on the football. I just really don't. When you actually break it down the way the quarterbacks work, you don't throw the ball, you pass the ball. You pass with touch and leverage in every single throw. That makes you in every single throw that makes you a quarterback. I hope Joe Milton gets evaluated based on the way he played at Tennessee. He was so much better this last year at Tennessee than even when he had played spot duty the year prior. I hope he's evaluated on that, and he doesn't just become the circus of throwing the ball far down the field. Which, yesterday on Josh Swain, I said the exact same thing, just said it in a different way. When it was brought up that he threw the ball 60-something miles per hour, when he threw it 73 yards in the air, and, you know, the people were ooh and ah, and I just didn't care because we already knew this about Joe Milton. We knew he'd throw it far. We've heard reports from Cole Kubley that he could throw it 90 yards. We've seen him throw it deep several times for 3 years. Like, who cares? We know what he needs to do. He has to throw the football with accuracy, anticipation. He has to be able to layer the football, throw with touch. I mean, we know that. That's what Joe has to do. So I'm glad that it helped. It helped him. Like, if it helped him, I'm glad it did. But, like, that's not going to make Joe a successful NFL quarterback. Throwing the ball far is not going to make him a successful quarterback. It didn't here. It won't there. So it's like people forgot. Like, he got to the combine, was throwing all hard and far, and people were like, oh my God, like, this is the first time you saw him throw. Like, we know this about Joe Milton.
Well, I think that was NFL people catching up to the Joe Milton experience.
Yeah, I guess so.
I was listening to Jordan Rogers talk on SEC Now, and he said that at the beginning of Joe's throwing portion period, he was a little slow in his dropbacks, and that was throwing him out of rhythm.
Yeah.
And as he became more comfortable, his footwork became better and was more fluid, and he started throwing the football with more conviction and with more accuracy. So got off to a little bit of a slow start because he was slow in his drops. But then once he kind of found a rhythm with his feet, he started delivering the football in a much better fashion.
Yeah, had better tempo in his drops, something that was mentioned, you know, during his throwing session. If you put yourself in that position, and I can't speak to being a quarterback, but I can speak of doing on-field work on that same field. And you have to understand something. Every GM, there's owners there, there's coaches there, there's all of your contemporaries there in one place. And initially, hey, be a little nervous. A little bit. And then it takes a little bit for you to settle down. So it seems that Joe was able to settle down. When he did, he made some great throws. One thing that was really good about Joe's performance is you're throwing the ball to all these different receivers. And DZ, man, sorry to hold you, man. Thanks for the phone call, brother. we'll see you here, hopefully in a couple of days.
I'll be there on Thursday, and I'll make sure to I'll be in both you guys. Again, we'll try to get our schedules together and link up.
Okay, cool. Thank you, man.
All right, have a good one.
The thing that was impressive about Joe going to football, the combine, is there's different receivers that have different speeds, that track the ball differently, that may have a different gear than others. And you have not put in work with these guys to build chemistry. But the fact that Joe was able to keep the ball off the ground as much as he did, throwing a new receiver, I thought that was pretty good. Like, I thought that was really, really good. Good on the receivers and definitely good on Joe Milton. All right, let's go back to the phones, 865-255-03. Good morning.
Well, so my thunder got stole because I was going to ask you about the combine and all that got answered. How you guys doing today?
Good. Well, what else you got? I know you got a backup.
Well, I do. I was going to ask Ben right fast, what the Checker Nealon's picture is that?
That is from the 2015 Oklahoma game.
Ooh, okay.
My now wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, we drove up to the game. That was the day, I believe it was on September 10th, the day before my birthday. So we came up for my birthday weekend and sat up in the upper deck below the scoreboard. She took that panoramic photo on her iPhone and got it printed off for me.
I've got the Ole Miss golf ball game.
Okay.
That's Swain got me tickets for, and I cherish that. I feel like we got robbed, but it was awesome environment. Awesome environment against Ole Miss. But yeah. But my backup, I guess, would be what's going on at Alabama with all the coaches there at the game and together, and seeing Nick amongst the crowd. What's Nick's duties, or what's going to be his deal with Alabama, if any? And also, what did you think about Drink's excuse or comment on standing on business?
His comment about that. Okay. I got you.
And another question, it's kind of off topic, but we see coaches following great coaches as Pat Summit. We seem like we can't get back in rhythm. What does it take for a team that's had someone like Pat Summit as a head coach and Nick Saban at Alabama to have someone come in and pick up the mantle and move forward? Because you don't see that happen. But what's keeping that from happening in, our program, say, in Lady Vols? And how about, I know you girls are really fans of the girls' Lady Vols basketball, but what do you think about the girls at, broke the record, scoring record.
Caitlin Clark. Yeah.
There you go. And I'll get out of here.
Big Caitlin Clark fans in the house, Turkey Man. Thanks for the phone call. Huge Caitlin Clark fans. What does it take to follow a legend? You got to hire a good coach. It's as simple as that. Like, when Dean Smith retired in North Carolina, they went through a period where they didn't win as much. And then you brought in another legend in Roy Williams and they started winning again. And Hubert Davis has done a really good job of continuing that legacy. Like, it's really that simple.
The Lady Vols are poorly coached, to your point. I mean, it's Rekia Jackson, give her the basketball and everybody get out of the way. And that's not how you beat the South Carolinas and the LSUs, especially when you have failed to recruit at even an average level. I mean, the roster has been an absolute disaster each and every season because one player gets hurt and you don't have any depth. I mean, you literally don't. It's not even that you don't even have players that haven't been developed. You don't have bodies on the bench. So, I mean, we could talk Lady Vols issues for quite some time. And I hate it because I am a fan of Kelly Harper, the person. And that is a feel good story if Kelly were to work out, but it's just not working out. And it's been a little ridiculous to see some who cover the team talk about moral victories and wanting to rank the Lady Vols because they lost to South Carolina in the fourth quarter, because they lost to LSU in the fourth quarter. No, that's not the standard of the Lady Vols. The standard is winning national championships and going to the Final Four, not going to the Sweet 16, not getting your butt kicked by Carolina and LSU and others. There are no moral victories when it comes to Lady Vol basketball. The standard is winning championships, and it feels like the Lady Vols are 10 country miles away from sniffing, competing for a championship. They're poorly coached. The roster is an abject disaster, and too much settling for moral victories, in my opinion, by too many people over there.
Hey, man. When you look at the totality of the season, and look at the record, it's hard to disagree with what you're saying there. I think the lack of criticism that the Lady Vols get plays into the narrative that women's basketball is not taken as seriously as it needs to. We talk about basketball and football because we take those sports serious. We take football extremely serious. We value football. Well, I value Lady Vol basketball. And I'm actually kind of surprised we don't hear more criticism in the media. I think our media uses soft pillows with Lady Vols, but they wouldn't do that with football, and they wouldn't do it with men's basketball. And I think it's a sign of respect to criticize in the same way that you would criticize any other sport that's not, you know, getting the job done. I'm a huge Kelly Harper fan. She's a VFL or LVFL. And it's tough when you play here and then you decide to coach. That's why I was a little nervous about Coach Foreman being AD. We saw how that played out. It's a tough position to be in for sure. For the Lady Vol program, for supporters, the decision makers, because this is not where this program wants to be, needs to be, or should be. It's really that simple. All right, let me go back to the phones, 865-255-03. But I will be respectful, not disrespectful, same way I was with Holly Worley, because at the end of the day, one of us. Good morning.
Good morning. The minute you get into moral victories with Lady Vols, the minute the whoever the coach is needs to be fired.
1,000%. And I have a little bit of a different perspective than Swain on the whole criticism thing. I think there's this in terms of women's sports and especially women's basketball, WNBA, women's college basketball, you get attacked if you criticize an aspect of something that's going on. If you criticize this player or that player at either level, or you criticize anything about the sport, there's like an army of people who jump on you quickly. So I think some who are within that world, Swain, I think they're a little scared criticize, because you get jumped on if you do.
If you're criticizing women's basketball as a whole and saying it's not a good product, then that's different than saying this player or this coach is not meeting the expectations and the standard. Like, I think those are two different situations. I think when you criticize or critique the same way you do in football, I think you're showing respect. Like, I watch the heck out of women's basketball. I watch it as much as I do men's basketball. But I do find it, and it's across the board, like, man, folks don't be criticizing women's basketball if a team's not playing well, or if a player's not playing well, or if a coach is not coaching well. Like, they don't be calling for people's jobs, women's basketball, college basketball. They don't do that. But they do it men's. They do it in football. They do it in men's basketball. And that's not equality, like, to me. And so I feel like if we want to treat them equal, let's be equal. That's how I feel. That's my approach. But D.R. Vol, I know you ain't called to talk about Lady Vol basketball, so what you got?
Well, in a way, I did. I'm like you, Swain. Mm-hmm. I've watched more women's basketball this year, not having a while. I watched LSU, South Carolina, and, I mean, God, last four or five Caitlin Clark games I've watched.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we need a new coach. I think she should be fired. We've got talent on that team that's being wasted. And the moral victory crap, man, I forget that. I've said that to y'all before. Like, I don't criticize out of hate. I criticize out of love. Like, I don't ground my kids because I hate them. I ground them because I love them. And we went through all that same crap with Pruitt. And you're right, Ben. I mean, you kind of get attacked, and there's a certain portion of this fan base that you say one thing about the Lady Vols, and you are just awful, the Antichrist.
If you don't say anything, then, you know, you get criticized because you're not paying attention to them, you're sleeping on them, you're not giving them the recognition.
But, yep.
But when you say, man, we should have won in the fourth quarter, then you get criticized for being negative. And you just can't have it both ways. Like, you speak up when they play well, which I know I have, when they went on the streak to start SEC play and put themselves in third place. But when you collapse like you did versus LSU, and, you know, you're not playing well, and, you know, like Ben said, the roster, you feel like you should be better, then, like, those should be grounds for – you know, some fair criticism, it should be okay. Like, you can't have both ways, in my opinion.
No, yeah. There's on one hand, there's like the Lady Vol issue, I feel like, in terms of criticizing. But I also do have a separate opinion that coincides that, like, the women's basketball following is very cult-like in the sense of if you criticize – Their viewpoint is, whether you're right or wrong in terms of criticizing, their viewpoint is, why are you shouldn't be doing that to one of your own. Like, people who cover the WNBA nationally, people who cover college women's basketball, people who cover individual teams, if you criticize this or that about the sport because they're already on edge kind of about how they're treated, they attack you because they feel like you're like, even if you're right in your criticism, don't say it out loud. Don't give ammunition for the people who don't like women's basketball. That's the sense that I've gotten in kind of following the sport the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's like a male versus female deal. And, like, if you're a female, like, you're not supposed to criticize women's sports because you're on the male side. No, like, I don't see it that way. I criticize males basketball because one thing that we hate that has been fixed over the last year, and that's the flopping. The flopping has gotten so annoying, and out of control, that we don't see it as much anymore. And we hardly ever saw it in the women's game. That's one thing I really, really appreciate about women's game, is because you have more examples of skill. Whereas the men's game, a lot of those guys rely on the athleticism, and they don't shoot it as well. They don't handle it as well. They don't run offense as well as you see in the women's game. That's why I really appreciate the women's game. I've always been a fan of the women's game. But I find that weird that people, we want equality, right? We want to be able to treat male sports the same as women's sports. And, hey, you don't have to like one sport or another. That's fine. That's cool. But, like, if one person wants to criticize, and if it's a fair and honest and it's accurate, it shouldn't be a problem. Like, it really shouldn't be.
So, Swain, if we're in church, I'd be giving a little extra in the contribution plate right now. I can't agree with that more. I did forget what I was calling about now. Ben, you had a great take earlier about Kentucky. I do think they're a great team, a lot of talent, but postseason play, they're not going to do anything, kind of like the Yankees. You have a good day, guys.
I saw your text.
Great team, really? Kentucky's a great team? How so? They really good, but great. So if Kentucky is great, what's Tennessee, D.R. Ball?
Elite.
Okay. If you want to make
I saw your text cool. box message.
If you want to make that D.R. distinction, Ball. I'm cool. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. I saw his text box message earlier calling out my Yankees. And technically, the Yankees haven't won any World Series, but they've done more in the postseason than Kentucky has over the last couple of years. That they at least get to the next-to-last round before getting swept or bowing out or choking. Kentucky can't even make it out of the first weekend. Yankees have at least have been making it out of the first weekend more often than not. But and I would even say, are they a really good team? I don't think you're a really good team if you're inconsistent and play defense as poorly as they do.
Our girl Jennifer Morris says, most people won't admit this, but men's sports are criticized much more than women's because people take it as criticizing women, quote. Too soft on the girls. Yeah, like, it's not that. And people do take it as, oh, man, you're criticizing women. You're putting the woman down. No, she turned the ball over. She turned the ball over 8 times. That's why we lost the game. She missed a block out. She hasn't made a shot. She's not playing hard enough. Like,
she didn't draw up a good inbounds play.
Yeah,
she didn't recruit well.
It's no different than, yo, this dude over here can't make a shot. He's turning the ball over. He's not playing hard enough. This coach is not doing what he needs to do. To me, it's no different. It's no different. No different. All right, let's go back to the phones. 865-255-03. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Enjoying the show, as always. Mike from Conyers here.
What up, Mike?
Hey, you know, I was listening to – I am enjoying this conversation, and it just made me want to call in because it occurred to me, and I'm listening to you talk about the women's game and basketball, and all of a sudden it occurred to me, you know, that's exactly the reason I enjoy watching women's golf is because, you know, those women are obviously not as big and strong as the men, and yet they can hit the ball nearly as far. And they know how to – I mean, they really they just have the technique down. I mean, those best lady golfers, wow. I mean, you watch their technique, you know, and as someone who's, you know, likes to play and is kind of late in life picking it up. But I will watch, you know, videos and breakdowns of lady golfers and because their technique is so good, you know, and it just, but it, yeah, it just made me think of that when I was listening to you talk about the skills, you know, that are, you see and when you watch women's basketball. But I just wanted to throw that in the mix. But yeah, anyway, as always, enjoy the show, guys.
Hey, thank you, man.
Bye.
Listen, I have coached football. I've coached girls basketball. I prefer girls basketball because, honestly, females are better listeners. They're better listeners. Simple as that. Knucklehead dudes like us, you got to tell us 4 or 5 times. Girls pick it up, boom, just like that. Boom, 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 boom. They're smarter and they're better listeners. All right, let's go to the text box. DR Vol says the Vols are Final Four bound, which makes them elite. Ah, okay. Okay, all right, I'm with you.
Wait a minute. DR, do you have any thoughts on his boy Bruce?
Leave D.R. Vol alone. He got a perfectly fine reason why that's his boy, Bruce. I totally get it. And I'm cool with Bruce, except for what he said about voting for the best player on the best team in the league. That's your SC player of the year. I think that's silly. Because if, like, South Carolina wins, ain't nobody on South Carolina's team deserve to be player of the year. So stop it, Bruce.
No. D.R. Albee. Off the Bruce train, finally. D.R. Albee only took him 9 years to jump off the Bruce train.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Good morning.
Hey, guys.
Hey, who we got there?
It's Rusty.
Hey, Rusty.
Great. It's great conversation. I adore Kelly as a human being, and I want her to succeed so much. Actually, I would love to see an offseason where she went out and got some elite assistants and her get this program in the right place that it should be. But as far as the criticism side of it goes, I see two things said, both polar opposites. One is she's not going to win and she needs to be fired, and this team underachieves and they have to fire her. And then the other one is who cares? It's women's basketball. Which one is more condescending and which one is worse for the program? Is it the one where you say you don't care about it and you don't criticize, or is it the one where you actually criticize? Because, I mean, that's the real thing.
Oh,
you're showing love, like D. Arval said. You're caring if you say we need to be better.
Every athletic director, every athletic program fears one thing. That's apathy.
Apathy.
Yep. Ralph Regent was at Maryland, won ACC Coach of the Year, and got fired because no one was coming to the games. People was tired. John Curry did not want to fire Butch Jones in his first year, 2017, coming off a 9-win season. Let Butch tell it. It's never been done before, Tennessee, winning 9 games. But John Curry didn't want to do it. But the apathy was so bad in 17, he had to. He had to fire Butch Jones. He had to. Apathy. And so, to answer your question, it's apathy, man. That's always worse. And I hate this. I hate that we're in this position. This was definitely not on the show notes or the show prep at all. Just kind of landed here. But, like, this is not good. This is the downside of when you hire one of your own, one of your legends. And Kelly Harper is a freaking legend, man. I hate it's not
going
as well as we wanted it to go at this point.
For sure.
Yeah.
But the big thing is, for the people that get mad when the criticizing happens, just remember that the people that criticize, at least they care. At least they want what's best for the Lady Vols. They're on your side. If you're part of, as Ben would say, the cult, the people who are complaining, at least they're supportive.
Yeah.
Or else they wouldn't even, or they would be the same thing. They would be saying things like, "Who cares? It's just women's basketball."
Dude, I was at the LSU game, Rusty, and thanks for the call, bro.
Yeah, man, y'all be good.
Like, I was like, "Wow, this is awesome." Cause it was a nice crowd, man. I get so excited when I see, you know, young girls rocking their Lady Vol gear going to the game. Like I love it, man. I love it. And we got some awesome fans. We do have a cult following. I think it's great. We'll see what happens in tournament. We'll see what happens, but.
Danny's about to face a tough decision.
Yeah, it'll be his first tough decision.
It absolutely will.
As far as coaching personnel, like, he's made some other tough decisions when it comes to, like, tickets and stuff like that. It's pissing people off here and there, but, like, those were long term, beneficial decisions in his eyes. And so, yeah, this will be the first coaching personnel decision that he'll have to take a hard look at. Trying to see what else is here on the text box. A lot of stuff right there about Lady Vols that we already touched on. A lot of comments. A lot of comments. I think it's, which is a good thing. I think it's a good thing.
There's a lot of people that care about Lady Vols basketball.
Yeah, for sure.
Because there's a lot of people that grew up on Lady Vols basketball, whether it be the 90s teams that had Kelly on it and Jamaica Holdclaw and everybody else, or people like me who grew up on Candace Parker. I mean, I vividly remember being on spring break in middle school and staying up with my parents watching Candace Parker and all the rest of the greats on that team, Shannon Bobbitt, Nikki Anasicki, and so many others. I vividly remember watching the Lady Vols win a national championship and competing for a national championship each and every single season. And the matchups with UConn, and those are in the 2000s. And I know people finally remember the 90s as well, and other teams. And there's a lot of people that care about the Lady Vols because they were very, very exciting program to follow for so long, rightfully so, right? Like Pat Summitt's one of the greatest coaches in the history of sports, not just women's basketball, but the history of sports. So I know a lot of people care for that reason. And right now the program is not what it should be. Tennessee should be neck and neck with South Carolina and UConn and LSU and programs of that nature. I mean, the Lady Vol basketball standard is the standard in women's basketball. And right now they're failing to meet it. It's as simple as that.
Caleb says, do you think Jabari Small has a shot of making the NFL roster as running back, or could he benefit from bulking up and filling a fullback role like Kari Blassingame did? No, he would not be a fullback. I think Jabari too short to be a fullback. I think he will have a shot of making the NFL roster as a running back. Jabari, really, really good making guys miss. Just needs to stay healthy. That's the main thing for him.
I do love the Kari Blassingame shout out, though.
Yeah. Nelson from Jackson says, hang up your Butch Please shirt in the background. Don't have one. Don't have one.
I had one. I got rid of it, though, yeah, after college.
I got rid of mine. But it's no different than when any coach is hired. There's always a catchphrase. With Dooley, with Kiffin, with Butch, with Pruitt, and Heupel.
Did Heupel have one?
Yeah, man. Hype is real. Hype train.
But
there's play on words with Heupel's name, just like it was with every other coach. Nelson just mad that he couldn't monetize it.
Yeah, he was talking about for me to hang it up on my prison wall back here.
Nah. Don't do that, man. Don't do that. Vol fan, how long is AJ Russell and Chris Stamos expected to be out? Who is pitching tonight? Now, we had AJ Russell and Cal Stark on the locker room on Sunday. And I asked about AJ Russell, his health. I was concerned about him. But you got the answer, Ben.
What'd he say?
He said he'll be all right.
Yeah, I got a we'll see when I asked yesterday if AJ is going to pitch this weekend. They're both okay. Chris Stamos and AJ Russell, they're both fine. It's just a matter of when do you get them back out on the mound. They are being overly cautious with AJ and with Stamos. Because you don't want to mess around with soreness and allow it to become an even greater problem. So I got a we'll see in terms of if AJ would be back this weekend. I took the we'll see as he's not pitching this weekend, but maybe I misinterpreted the way it came off. So we'll see. I'd be surprised if he's not pitching in some capacity by the time the SEC opening weekend rolls around, which it's – not this weekend, it's next weekend. There's only one more weekend of non-conference play, and then it's time for SEC play, and I'd be surprised if they're not pitching in some capacity that weekend.
Yeah, man, your twin, Kyle Stark, Farragut boy.
Finally got one that you agree with. We finally got one that you didn't like the Steph Curry one.
Bro, you look like somebody I know. I was like, man, you look like damn Ben McKee. I didn't say it to him, but I was looking at him like, yo, he looks like Ben McKee. Man, those two dudes, awesome, man. So cool. I asked AJ Russell about getting bat flipped on. I mean, like, Tennessee did a good job auditioning it. over the last couple of years. Can our pitchers take it? And, man, he had an awesome answer about it and said, like, he don't even pay attention to the hitter unless they say something. He's usually looking at the ball. And he doesn't have a problem with bat flips as long as they don't say anything to him. And that's when you have a problem. So, man, those two guys were awesome. They did a great job interviewing, man. Baseball players are fun. Football players, though, they all like uptight, man. They all uptight and worried about saying the wrong thing. Baseball players, they like, they so laid back and chill. Just let it fly.
When are you going to come to a game this season?
Man, there's plenty of games to come to. It just started getting 70 degrees outside.
When was the last time you went to a game?
I don't know when I'm going to a game.
Time you went to a game?
Bro, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow.
Bruh.
I don't know what I'm doing this afternoon.
You think you're slick talking about how many games baseball plays. You say the same thing at the beginning of each season.
I went to games last year. I don't know which one I'm going to. So I can't tell you which one I'm going to. I know the LSU game is one that's on my radar.
Only because the spring game's the same day. Here's a good question for
about the spring game. Ben? I ain't supposed to say that, but come on, Ben. Spring game.
Well, you'd be on campus for the spring game and walk over to the baseball game. Treader 97, and I hope I pronounced that correctly, has a good question, a serious question on the way out the door, Swain. What's the best situation NFL team Joe Milton could get drafted by?
Kansas City. What's so funny? Why are you laughing?
He would never play.
Matt Schaub didn't play behind Mike Vick and then became the Texans quarterback. Like, you don't have to play at the beginning, but you got to learn how to play.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. You got to learn how to play the position, man. And learn how to play a position with the best quarterback coach in the NFL. Like, that's why I say Andy Reid. No hesitation. And you get to learn from Patrick Mahomes, who also has a really big arm.
No, that'd be a great situation. I laughed mostly not at you, but I just can't envision him playing for the Chiefs, quite frankly.
What can you envision him playing?
The first spot that came to mind is Dallas. You get to learn from Dak Prescott.
What the?
And then if
Dallas
decides to move on. Look, I'm trying to find, in my mind, I'm trying to find the best combination of potentially being the guy one day while also being developed.
Who's going to develop him?
Mike McCarthy. I'll concede that was a bad one. I brought that one up more so because I don't know that Dak's going to be there. So in that one, I was thinking of more of opportunity to play one day, not necessarily the coaching aspect.
You think Joe Milton needs to be in Dallas?
No, I don't.
The last place he needs to be. Not talking about McCartney.
You're right.
Like, that's the fishbowl of the biggest fishbowl you can possibly.
You are correct.
Okay.
You are correct. I'm gonna leave you alone. Again, I was trying to think of somewhere to where he could possibly take over as the guy. And I could see a situation where Dallas moves on for Dak at some point.
I don't see Joe Milton as a starter. So that's why we're different. Like, I don't see Joe Milton starting unless somebody gets hurt for a while.
What about the Bears? What do you want the Bears to do? Do you want them to keep Justin Fields or do you want them to go get Caleb Williams?
I don't feel right about Caleb Williams. Something in the pit of my stomach.
Yeah,
doesn't feel right about Caleb Williams, man.
I'm with you.
Yeah, it is. I just don't feel right. So tough decision, man. Real tough decision that the Bears have to make. But
hey, look, I would gladly give you Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett for Justin Fields.
No.
I'll even throw in Deontay Johnson.
No.
I'll give you Deontay Johnson, Mason Rudolph, Kenny Pickett, and a 7th-round pick for Justin Fields.
No, thank you, sir. I am good on that. I want nothing to do with Kenny Pickett. Right now, it is Hillers Happy Golden Ticket Sweepstakes. All you have to do is enter your email at hillergoldenticket.com and you are automatically entered to win prizes that include a $5,000 gift card from Hiller, a $1,000 gift card, or one of 10 Happy Hiller Club memberships. Take advantage of 0% interest financing for 48 months on select new 8 VAC systems or 36 months on tankless water heaters. Also, home hole generators. Don't miss out. Enter to win now. Go to the website. That is hillergoldenticket.com. Shout out to Ben McKee on his move. Jennifer Morris, Keller Williams Realty. The GOAT, making sure that Ben's all taken care of. For Ben McKee, I am Jason Swain. The podcast was recorded in three different places today. So apologize for Thursday. Recorded in one place and for some reason didn't want to record. That's technology. But recorded in three different places. We'll have that podcast posted as soon as possible. Have a great day. Peace and much love. We are out. Swain Event, fueled by Daddy Barbecue.
Good morning. Is Adrian awake?